Okay, hello everybody. We are here in the first international at the Avian-Tetarian Congress. And we are here with Michael Jones. Hello Michael, how are you?
Good.
Michael, I want to ask you first of all, what do you mean about the crisis of the year 1965?
Well, first of all, we spoke yesterday about the breaking of the production code in America during 1965. The reason this was possible was because of the state of crisis that the church had reached at the end of the Vatican Council. The documents of the Vatican Council are an expression of the Catholic faith. There's nothing wrong with the documents, but the interpretation of the documents had been taken, the control of the interpretation of the documents had been taken over by the Jewish-controlled media, as well as by the CIA, Time Life, the major magazine in the United States at the time, and these agencies, and created a huge distortion of what the Council was about, and a huge distortion of the Catholic faith. This in turn led to a crisis of identity among the Catholics that led to the collapse, as I said, of the resistance to Hollywood, and collapse across the board. It also led to a revolution within the Catholic Church. The revolution broke out 3 years after 65, in 1968, when Pope Paul VI issued his encyclical on birth control, Humanae Vitae. There was literally a revolution within the Catholic Church. The Catholic University in Washington, D.C. was the center of this revolution. It was people within the church who had been either become agents of the Americanization of the church, or else didn't understand what was going on, or else for whatever reason joined in a rebellion against the Catholic bishops of the United States. The bishops, unfortunately, had also been disarmed, because we're talking about a moment in time when from an ideological point of view, the American empire was never stronger. It seemed to the people in the church that the Catholic Church had answers that the church did not have, that the United States of America could solve problems that the church could not solve. The church hadn't solved these problems in 1900 years at this point, but America could solve these problems because America had power and America was smarter, and so on and so forth. As a result, the bishops were crippled. They were simply crippled. Didn't know how to respond to a revolution.
Yesterday you mentioned that the Catholic Church nowadays, somehow they have adopted the North American principles.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the fundamental principle we're talking about is the separation of church and state. This had a devastating effect on the church. Now, as you know, this is the fundamental principle of the United States. It was founded. What we lacked among generally the population at large and among the Catholics was a real understanding of the meaning of the separation of church and state. What does it mean when you basically exclude religion from public life? Well, it means that the rich people take over the country. By rich, I mean these are the powerful people, because money is power. And so as a result, you had the destruction of the social order, because everything was now based on fundamentally capitalist principles. And the only thing that mattered was the accumulation of money. And that was the only thing that this group held as valuable. At this point, the Catholics didn't understand it. There was an understanding among the theologians who had some type of sophistication that the Catholic Church has to function wherever it is on the face of the earth. Sometimes it's in hostile circumstances, sometimes it's in good circumstances, but it can't pretend that hostile circumstances are good. Well, that was the battle here, because there were certain elements in the church who wanted to say the church doesn't simply tolerate the separation of church and state. The separation of church and state is a good thing, that they should do it. It's a good thing, and that actually the church should model itself on these principles. Well, that was a catastrophe. It was a disaster for the church. It was a disaster for the church worldwide, Spain was a classic example that suffered.
And do you think, I mean, from the year 1965 or before, some lefty groups has infiltrated the Catholic Church, or the Freemasons infiltrated the Catholic Church?
Well, which is it? Is it the left or is it the Freemasons?
Both. What's your opinion?
There were all sorts of movements. The main infiltration was the American government, the CIA. This was the main infiltration. There were reactions to that infiltration. For example, in South America, Central America, you had liberation theology, which was Marxist ideology, which is also alien. It's an alien ideology also being imported into the Catholic Church. Why do we have these alien ideologies intervening? Well, because the church is not secure. It's not sure of itself. It feels that it doesn't have the wherewithal to come up with the understanding it needs to deal with the world. And that's what you found throughout this period. So one reaction leads to another reaction. And we're back and forth, and alien ideologies are proliferating because the church is unsure of itself.
Let me ask you the following, Michael. I heard you speak about the conversion of the Jews. You have some works regarding the conversion of the Jews to Christianism.
Yes, this is one of the main consequences of the Second Vatican Council, is that the Church has decided not to promote the conversion of the Jews. Well, this is another catastrophe. This means that the Church is not preaching the gospel. The principle is very clear. It's in the Acts of the Apostles. When Peter goes to Jerusalem, what is the church's attitude toward the Jews? Peter gives the example. Peter goes to Jerusalem. He says to the Jews, "You killed Christ. The man that was, sent to you by God, you killed him." And it says at this point that the Jews were cut to the heart. They understood their guilt. They understood their guilt. And then Peter follows through and he says, and they say to Peter, "What must we do?" And Peter says, "You have to be baptized." That's it. That's the whole story, you know? And so what we have is a kind of parody of this when Pope Benedict goes to Israel. What does Pope Benedict go, what does he say when he goes to Israel? Does he say, "You killed Christ"? If he's not going to say, "You killed Christ," he shouldn't go. You know, you don't have to go to Israel. If you think there's no possibility for them understanding it, then don't go. But don't go to Israel and then talk about the Jews as their elder brothers, go through meaningless gestures like praying at the Wailing Wall. I don't know what that means. When the Jew prays at the Wailing Wall, he is praying for the restoration of the temple. No Catholic can pray for the restoration of the temple because that means the overthrowing of Christianity, the restoration of an obsolete religion that was replaced when the Jews killed Christ. So we are, the mind of the church is crippled because it now has created a situation where the gospel does not apply. That Jesus Christ said, "Go and preach to all nations." That means includes the Jews. The Jews were the first nation. Jesus Christ only preached to the Jews. Okay, so it's the one nation that you have to preach to the Jews, in addition to all other nations. Well, now it's the one nation where you don't preach to the Jews. The Pope himself has said, Pope Benedict himself has said that there is no organized apostolate to preach to the Jews. They will convert at the end of time. Well, why will they convert? They'll convert if you don't tell them to? The only reason the Jews in Jerusalem converted was because Peter told them, "You killed Christ." At that point, they were cut to the heart. If they're not cut to the heart, there's no point of converting. If you go and tell them how wonderful you are the most wonderful people on the face of the earth.
They don't have any interest to convert.
Why should they convert? They're already wonderful. If you say, "You are our elder brothers," where did that come from? That's not in the scripture. If they're not going to convert. If you tell them, "You are the synagogue of Satan," if they tell them, "You killed Christ and you have become enemies of the entire human race." If there's ever a moment to say that, it is now because of the behavior of Israel. If there's ever a lesson to be learned from the behavior of Israel, is that the Jews are the enemies of the entire human race. They have proven that empirically now.
And do you think this can be restored? This situation, the church can be restored? Can we resist?
It's not a question of can it be destroyed.
It should.
No, it's not a question of it should be destroyed. The question is when will it be destroyed? Because it has to be restored. Because if the church perdures in error, it is not the church. I mean, the church can err for a period of time. The church can make mistakes. Certain people make mistakes. But over the long haul, the church cannot perdure in error, because if it did, it would not be the church. So if you're going to bet, you know, if you want to take out options on the stock market and short the church, I'd say you have to bet that the church will restore at some point or other, even though it seems that nobody is saying this at the moment. You know, I mean, Walter Kaspar said in Boston that Jews just have to be faithful to their covenant. Well, I'm sorry, but they have no covenant. They can't be faithful to it. There's no temple. There's no priesthood. How can they be faithful to their covenant when they lack these things? They can't perform the rituals that are necessary. There's no temple, no priesthood, no sacrifice. Only the church has these three things. The church is the new Israel. This is the teaching of the Catholic Church. We published an article in Culture Wars magazine criticizing the Catechism of the United States, which said that the Jews can be saved by being faithful to the Mosaic Covenant. We said this is heresy.
It is.
6 months after we did it, the bishops changed their catechism. And then they said it had nothing to do with the article in Culture Wars. Well, I mean, if that's what you want to say. But the fact of the matter is that we were right and they were wrong. They have to change it. We have to get back to the original teaching of the church on the Jews.
Michael, let me ask you, I heard you were in Iran last week, right? Can you tell us what were you doing here, there? You were invited.
I was invited. This is the third time I've been to Iran. And I was invited to lecture at universities about the culture wars, about how the Iran, every country in the world is going to be subject to the culture wars. And I tried to give an explanation of how Hollywood is a function, an agent of the culture wars, one of the main agents that spreads American culture through the world by destroying indigenous culture. It's indigenous to some, it's not a primitive high culture in Iran. So I went from one city to the other, you know, giving my talk. They're very passionate people, high culture, high intellectual culture, and they've suffered from covert warfare at the hand of the United States for over 60 years now. It began in 1953 with the CIA coup d'etat that overthrew Mossadegh. It intensified after the overthrow of the Shah because of the hostage crisis, and it has continued up to this day. And I told them, even if there's a sanctions bill, which there probably will be, the sanctions probably will be lifted, that means an intensification of psychological warfare, not an abatement of psychological warfare.
So Iran, they are defending their identity, they're free to be, their right to be free, right? They're trying to protect their place and their people, right?
Yes.
Is there something wrong with that?
No. I would say they're, of all of the cultures in the world, I think Iran has been most successful in preventing the Americanization of their culture. And why? Why? Okay. Well, one of the main reasons is that the Ayatollah Khomeini explicitly repudiated the notion of the separation of church and state. He understood. He was a deep thinker. He had read Plato. Plato in the Laws said that these cultures need a guardian, an archon is the Greek word that they use. The city needs an archon to preserve, to protect it from degeneracy. Because if you just leave it over to popular will, a combination of popular will and commerce, that's what the United States provides. Let the marketplace decide. You will have degeneracy. And if there's ever proof of that, it's been the United States of America. So it's a struggle because all of these people are exposed to Western culture and Western propaganda. And Western propaganda says if women have to cover their heads, they're not free. You know?
Let me ask you the following, Michael. Did you have any problems or were you persecuted for thinking like you think, for sharing these ideas?
with
the
world.
In Iran or at home?
No, at home, actually, in the U.S.
Well, the persecution began long time ago. In 1979, I got a job at a Catholic college to teach American literature, a tenure-track job, which means I had 6 years to prove myself. And I was fired 1 year after I got that job because of my stand against abortion. So I got fired at a Catholic college for being against abortion. I kept trying to say, I told my dissertation advisor, I got fired because of my stand on abortion. And he said, oh yeah, they're a Catholic college. And I said, no, I was against it. I got fired for being against it. Nobody could understand this. But what we're talking about here was the cultural subversion of the institutions of the Catholic Church in the United States in the period following 1965. This is a classic example of it. The feminists had taken over a Catholic college. It called itself a Catholic college. It asked Catholic parents to send their children there, spend a lot of money to send their children there, and when they got there, they would subvert their faith and their morals. They would promote lesbianism, they would promote feminism, and their job was to basically engage in the social engineering of Catholic children. So that was the beginning of my persecution, but as St. Paul says, we're always persecuted but never abandoned, and so in many ways, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it allowed me to start the magazine that is now Culture Wars. And if I hadn't started that, I would never understand what was going on. I wouldn't have the understanding that I have now of what is going on, of how the culture is used against not only the Catholic people of the United States, but the people, every culture throughout the world.
Michael, you have followers all over the world. Are you working on something new right now? Do you have a new work?
Well, I would like to, I mean, I spoke at the Islamic Research Foundation at Mashhad, which is associated with the holy shrine of the eighth imam. And I gave the talk on Hollywood, told them what happened with Hollywood, and they liked it. And they wanted me to come and teach there, they wanted to pursue collaboration. So I've suggested a collaboration, a conference on 1979, but also on 1965 as well, which means on the separation of church and state. Because I think this would be, because what was 1979? It was the reaction to 1965. 1965 was the beginning of the sexual revolution. The sexual revolution begins when the woman takes off her shirt and exposes bare breasts. We have pornography within 7 years spreading throughout the world. Pornography is now a weapon of the psychological warfare, and that's supposed to go on forever. That, according to the Fukuyamas of the world, this is the end of history. That's all there's going to be from now on. Well, it wasn't the end of history. God is in charge of history, and God orchestrated an uprising in 1979 against this order. First, the return of the Ayatollah to Iran in February of 1979, the creation of the Islamic Republic of Iran based on the Valiat-e-Faqih, or the rule of the guardians. The rule of the guardians, there was no separation of church and state. 4 months later, in June of 1979, Pope John Paul II arrives in Warsaw and says Mass for 1 million Catholics in an officially communist country, officially atheistic country. And so we have twin uprisings against materialism, against American materialism and against Soviet materialism, the two groups that had colonized Europe and it effectively crippled Europe. And so I thought, well, let's bring these two groups of people together, the Catholics and the Shia, or specifically, let's bring Poles and Iranians together and ask them about their experiences in this period of time, like from, let's say, 79 to the present, especially in regard to the separation of church and state. Because neither group has had complete success, okay? What you had now is disillusionment with Western materialism now in Poland. My book, Libido Dominandi, Sexual Liberation and Political Control, has been translated into Polish. I did a book tour in Poland all throughout Poland talked about the idea of sexual liberation as a form of political control. Because of their experience with Western materialism, the Poles now understand that there's something wrong. Something bad happened. We were all supposed to become free. Now we're all enslaved either to our passions or to the usurers, one or the other. Now the same people who were supposedly liberated us are now forcing sodomy, homosexual liberation. So the Polish bishops reacted and issued a statement on gender ideology. And my book had some influence in that, you know. So that's the bad experience in Poland. There's a reaction now in Poland. In Iran, after the first 10 years of the revolution, birth rate is 3.4 children. Then in 1989, the Ayatollah Khomeini dies, and birth control is introduced to the country. This is a catastrophe, a demographic catastrophe. Birth rate is now 1.7.
Who promotes the birth control? The UN too, right?
Of course, the United Nations promotes. But the Iranians, you don't need to promote birth control to Iranians. They know about it. Iranians think education is very important. So all the women get educations. As soon as the woman gets an education, she needs a job. She wants a job. In America, you're forced to get a job because you have to pay off the debts that you achieve. As soon as you get a job, you can't understand how to have children. How do I have children and have a job? It's an impossible situation. And the Iranians are simply reacting to it. So I got to preach, a great honor for me, I got to preach at a mosque in Tehran. I got to sit in the imam's chair there in front of all of these people. All these Muslims, they're all sitting on their carpet. I've never even been in a mosque. It's like a carpet, all these Persian carpets. All these Muslims are sitting there, you know, on the floor. And I got to talk about what I just talked about.
Well, what an experience.
It was an experience, a great experience. So I said, you know, the Ayatollah Khomeini, the current supreme leader, gave a speech in 2010 in which he said that this birth control decision was the biggest mistake he had ever made in his life. And he now begged Allah for forgiveness for doing that. And I said, I said to the men there, I was all men, there were women sort of on the other side, but said to the men, I said, this is the biggest crisis facing Iran right now. If you wait 20 years, it'll be over and the Iranians will die out. As things are now, the Iranian people will die out after over 2,000 years of civilization. That's a huge event. So then I said, how many of you are married? 10, 15 men raised their hand. So I said to the first one, how many children do you have? Zero. 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 Not one man in that mosque who was married, not one married man had a child. And I said, I can't give you any greater illustration of the crisis here. This is the crisis. You need to solve it right now. Right now. Because if you wait, right now the majority of the Iranian people are in childbearing age. So you could solve this problem now. So I was at I was in Isfahan, and they told me it's wish night. I didn't know this, but there's apparently a wish night in Islam. Yeah, you can make a wish. This is the night when you make a wish. So I said, okay, it's wish night. I'm gonna make a wish, okay? I said, I have five children, and I have 15 grandchildren. So I said, I wish you would all have five children and 15 grandchildren. So they all stood up and cheered. So then, after the talk is over, some woman, all the women wear the chador. You know, so this young woman in a chador comes up to me and she says, I've never heard anyone say this before. I have never heard anyone talk like this before. I said, well, good. Aren't you glad I'm here? This is why God sent me here, because there's no one here talking this way. And I'm saying that this needs to spread, and this because we need a convergence now of the forces that appeared in history in 1979. Okay, we had an interregnum of the end of the anti-communist crusade. The United States joined with Islam to fight communism, and they defeated communism in Afghanistan. But Hegel tells us history is dialectic, which means that every alliance is leading to a civil war. And so the Islamic CIA alliance has now led in 2003 to the war between Islam and the United States. And I'm saying every dialectic, every split also leads to a synthesis. And so the synthesis is now between the Catholics and the Shia, the Muslims from Iran. Why is that? Because there was also the Islamic side of this war against the Soviet Union was a union of the Sunni and the Shia, and now they are at war with each other. Or let's put it more specifically, the Wahhabi of Saudi Arabia are now engaged in an actual shooting war with Iran. There was a proxy war in Syria, that's what that was about. Now there's an actual shooting war. The Houthi of Yemen have now have been attacked by the Saudis. These are Shia, the Saudis are Wahhabis. There's a direct war again. So all I want to say is that I want to come back to Iran. I want to bring these people together, and let's talk about how God is moving in human history. Because I think that's the message of Hegel. That's the message of 1979. And I think that's the message today that we have to understand.
Michael, any final message or advice you want to give to your supporters?
Yeah, I mean, God has brought me to Mexico. And now I realize I never understood the meaning of Our Lady of Guadalupe. We all know about Our Lady of Guadalupe. You go to the beach in Indiana, there's a guy sitting on the beach. You know he's a Mexican because he's got Our Lady of Guadalupe tattooed on his back. But what's the meaning? What's the meaning? These Mexicans are all over the place. We all eat Mexican food now. It was what I was talking about today. It took 1,000 years for these German tribes, who were my forebears, the Suevi, to come together as a nation. But that happened with a miracle in Mexico. And suddenly I realized Mexico is the example that I'm looking for in this world. It's something that Americans find hard to understand because we believe in the separation of church and state. No Mexican could ever believe in the separation of church and state because it was divine intervention that created their country. How could you believe in this? How could you ban Our Lady of Guadalupe from discussion of the state when she created the nation? So that's the message, the image. And again, as I said yesterday, Viva Cristo Rey.
Viva. Thank you so much for having us, Michael.
Thank you for having me.